This is PHP BB Weekly, episode number 148, recorded live on Saturday, May 8th, 2010. Working the assembler line. Hello, welcome to PHP BB. I guess it's weekly? I think. It's been a long time, huh?
3 weeks. Three or four weeks for you.
Whatever works. PHP BB monthly, I guess. Now, welcome. Oh, I got something in my throat. Welcome to PHP BB Weekly, episode number 148. It is Saturday, May 8th, 2010. I'm your co-host, Douglas Bell, back from the dead, back from D.C., back in the wonderful San Francisco Bay Area, coming to you today, and, of course, as always,
David Lewis, Highway of Life, Washington State, as usual, so finally we're on the same time zone again.
Yeah, I think I might stay a while, so it should be fun. We're getting back into the swing of things. We'll get caught up. We'll talk a little more about that later on. Of course, we are still catching up a bit, so we've missed a lot of PHP BB news. So we are going to do the lazy thing and ignore all of that PHP BB news today. We are going to do a special non-live episode later this week where we'll go in depth into the PHP BB news. Instead, we're going to focus today on a special guest, which actually, David, you're going to introduce.
Yes, I want to introduce Andy Singleton, who is the president and founder of Assembla.com. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
And we know all of you probably want to hear about lots of the a lot of the news that's come through PHP BB recently, which has been fairly big news. But you'll have to wait until either sometime this week or next week to hear about all that.
Well, we decided we'd be better to do the news justice and also Andy justice by separating them rather than trying to conglomerate everything into this one episode. So.
Yeah, otherwise you guys might have to suffer through 2 hours of PHP BB Weekly.
Yeah, we're think of it like we're like hungover from our hiatus, so we're starting back slowly. I think that was the biggest insult that could have given Andy whatsoever. David, why don't you take over for a little while now?
Sure. Well, before we get started, I just wanted to mention, I don't know if you guys heard about the flood that's going on in Nashville, which is my old home. Mm-hmm. There is now $1.5 billion in damage. It's coming up to be one of the most costly, if not the most costly, natural disaster in U.S. history that you probably never heard about because the news has not been reporting it, strangely
enough.
Because
of the other costly natural disaster in U.S. history happening in the Gulf.
Well, it's not that costly, but not nearly as costly. But
they haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. So
the world is ending. How many natural disasters have we had now in 2010? I feel like we're approaching a dozen now.
Did you see the John Stewart bit on just the plethora of material available now?
Oh my gosh, he had like six things to do in 10 minutes. Which reminds us of what we're avoiding today, covering all that news.
Yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to mention you can donate $10 to the Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund by texting Red Cross to 90999, and that will go to the relief effort in Nashville. So wanted to mention that. I've been keeping track on it because that was where I lived for about 12 years, and it's pretty devastating to see your old home go underwater.
you actually saw your own home underwater?
No, I'm at City. No. Oh. My house in Nashville, I still have a house in Nashville, and it's fine. It's above the water line, fortunately. But there's a creek over there, and the water is usually about 12 to 15 feet below the bridge.
Yeah.
And now it's been hitting the bridge. It's the water so high. I just can't believe it. It's unbelievable.
Wow. So that's insane. As John Stewart said, why couldn't it be Philadelphia? Just sitting there. Okay, we're going to get the hate mail now.
It's also a symptom of the internet that you're in touch with so many different areas that any one of them is going to have a disaster on any given day. Of course. One of them will have a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just knocking wood that we don't get San Francisco doesn't get its turn. Everywhere else but here so far.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when it will come to San Francisco in the form of an earthquake.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Better later than sooner.
That's a big hosting. That's a big advertisement when you go to San Francisco. The hosting guys are like, not in a seismic area.
It's ridiculous. I think it was a month or two ago when there was some small plane that didn't take off properly. It ran into a bunch of power wires, and it sent like half the internet offline because everyone in Palo Alto lost their power.
My favorite is the squirrel that chewed through the cable. Like, what do they put on these cables? Peanut butter? You hear that all the time.
On that note, why don't we find out, just for the people who have no idea what Assembla is, kind of like me, what Assembla is.
Assembla is a website, assembla.com, where we host workspaces for distributed software teams, which is most of you guys. I know you two guys are in different places.
There you go.
And we started working on it about 10 years ago when I needed programmers for my my enterprise software company, Power Steering at the time. And rather than going out and doing outsourcing, I decided to study how open source teams work. And the open source teams are interesting because they don't travel, they don't outsource to an office. They just sit down wherever they are and they start working, which is pretty efficient. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn to work with people that way, then you can work with a lot of really interesting people and really talented people. Hmm. So I started figuring out how to actually, manage these teams and recruit people for these teams to do commercial software development. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, about 4 or 5 years ago, we started working on Assembla.com, which was really the bag of tools that we use to work with our teams. Mm-hmm. And we made it available free to people who are doing public or open source projects, and also on a subscription basis to people who are doing private projects. And we've grown, bit by bit. And I think we're providing a lot of value for people who don't really think about how to work with distributed teams, but for whom it comes naturally because they have open source experience. And we're also providing extra value for people who are coming to this from other parts of probably commercial software development world and learning how to do it. We provide the basic tools that you'll need. If you're working with more than one person is working on code, you need a source code repository. And we provide Subversion and Git source code repositories. And we actually just started offering those free again to anybody because we saw the market was really going towards free and we needed to move on in our own thinking to some of the other tools, ticketing or issue management, which is where people keep their list of tasks, and basic collaboration tools like Wiki, Messages. We're going to be bringing chat back, new and improved, over the next few weeks. So that's what we do.
So now, actually, one of the things I heard you say, if it's more than one developer, you're usually working on a version control system. And actually, I think that even a single developer, I find that working on a version control system is extremely beneficial. And, this is just for the benefit of a lot of the people who don't know. And that is basically a version control system, even as a single developer, you're developing code for it. You want to be able to keep track of all your changes from time to time, especially like a lot of the mod author community, you releasing different versions of your mod. You want to see what changes that you made in your history, and certainly Assembla offering the free private hosting if you wanted to go that way, or free public hosting, which is even better because then you get some of the other tools. It does give you that ability, which I like.
Yes, I think version management is important even for a single individual. Mm-hmm. It gives you the opportunity to tag something and then distribute it. If you have two or more people working, it's almost impossible to proceed without source code management tools. And fortunately, there's good source code management tools available. There's been a real explosion of knowledge about it over the last 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. So now, is Assembla open source?
Assembla releases its code Assembler releases his code under an open but not free license. So you can go to www.assembler.com/space/assembler-dev, and you can see our code. We've posted it in a Git repository. We sell our services, so you can get that code for development purposes. And fortunately, we have lots of developers who help us work on this code, and you know, this is a very convenient way for us to work with them. We don't actually let you use it on production servers unless you get a license from us, and there's various ways to do that. Although the online service at assembler.com is so convenient and really quite inexpensive that most people just do that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, it certainly is easier than having to maintain or set it up and then maintain it on your own server. Although for the larger, I know for the larger companies, that's certainly what they would opt to go for, I'm sure.
Yes, we do have a product called Private Assembler that we sell to bigger companies who want to have, who either have security requirements, they want to run it on their own server, or they want to customize it and rebrand it. And we sell that. Actually, most of our business has been with government, where they have security requirements, where they need to run it on their own network.
That's good. So one of the things that a lot of the PHPV community has been familiar with within PHPV, a recent change is that they moved their issue tracking or their bug tracking for the PHPV software from their own homegrown system to a Jira system by Atlassian. And I've heard a lot of really mixed reviews on that particular system, and I'm not at all a fan of it. And I brought up Assembler to them, and you know, right now they don't want to change, and yet they know that I think a lot of people don't like using Jira because it's not user friendly at all. But when bringing up the Assembler, they didn't seem as familiar with it, so they had a couple of questions about it, and that one of them was if they were to use Assembler and it was on the assembler.com, you know, the site, they're worried about data locking. Can you?
Yeah, people, when you work on something and you put your, you know, heart and soul into it and you build intellectual property, you want to know that you can take your ball and go home. You know, you can take that away and use it where you want to use it. And at Assembler, we try to support that in two ways. One way is obvious. If you've got source code with us, you can export it in various ways, and you can use it with other Git or Subversion servers. The other way is more complicated. We have data structures like tickets, you know, and issues, which are not the same as the way Jira does it or Redmine. I see that some PHP BB projects use Redmine.
Mm-hmm.
We have wiki documentation that you know, that's not the same format as, you know, MediaWiki or something that you might want to move to. So we do offer a service called in the app. You'll actually find a link in the admin area for creating an export of all the data in a JSON format, which you can actually read. And we do have people that, you know, that hit the button. It'll give you all of that stuff. All the objects, the tickets, the wiki, the files, and so on in a JSON format. And with a little bit of effort, you can parse that into other systems.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but it is an interesting thought. Like, what's the lingua franca? You know, should we export that as a track workspace, for instance? A lot of people use track. You know, is there some sort of common format we could use to make that easier?
Mm-hmm. So now, PHPV uses GitHub for its source control right now, and Assembler, I noticed Assembler has an option for GitHub integration. Can you explain that a little?
Yes, a lot of people really like GitHub because of social coding, right? That's mm-hmm. GitHub's pitch,
mm-hmm.
and GitHub is really, you know, has really become a great place to share code with other people who will fork it and contribute development. We've adopted some of those features on Assembler, but in a way that's more oriented towards commercial software teams as opposed to individuals sharing and forking code. And so a lot of open source projects use GitHub for that. And we try to bring our value to that party. So We have a ticketing issue management system that we've worked on pretty extensively. We think it's great for managing lists of tasks that are bigger than what you can manage in the simple systems that they have at GitHub or Google Code. Mm-hmm. And you can actually add GitHub as a tool, a little tab on an assembler space that has that ticketing and issue management system. And we'll suck in the commits and link them correctly to tickets so that you can, when you push code to GitHub, you can say this closes ticket number 99. And over on assembler, you'll see that as part of the event stream, and you'll see that link to the ticket.
So your commits that you commit through to GitHub are they go through the stream on assembler?
Yes, they do. And this is one of the big things that I'd like to point out about working with a distributed team, which is you need that event stream. And most people are familiar with event streams because they use something like Facebook and they get the Facebook news feed or even Twitter. And if you're working with people, you want to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
So one of the things we try to do at assembler is pull together all those threads. If you're committing on GitHub, well, you should be able to see that. We have actually a stream page and email alerts that we send out. Mm-hmm. You should be able to see what people are doing, even over on GitHub and in all the various tools in assembler. They all create events that you can subscribe to by RSS or email or just see on the web activity feed page. Mm-hmm. I hope to do more of those types of integrations because I think it's a really, really important thing that teams need.
Mm-hmm. Now, in looking over some of the features on assembler, I noticed there's actually quite a few versioning control system options available. Can you go through some of those?
Yes. We originally assembler was just a wraparound for track and subversion, which is what people were using 4 years ago. Since then, the state of the art has advanced a lot. We evolved so that now you can get track and subversion on assembler. You know, assembler does the team management. You can get a nice web 2.0 interface for inviting team members and managing your alerts, you know, what kind of emails you'll get and that kind of thing. And you can use track and subversion straight linked to that the same way we link to GitHub. More than track does. So we built our own code browser, and that's what we support by default right now. We call it the Source SVN tool. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little more integrated, more flexible way of looking at a subversion repository. Over the last 2 years, people who do work with distributed teams have started to move to distributed source control systems like Git. And we now support Git at the same level that we support subversion. We have both track and Git, and we have an integrated code browser. We've also added the kinds of features that have been coming up on the internet, like the fork and merge. You can fork it, create your own repository that nobody can screw with, and then submit changes back. That's the basic open source workflow. And we use that actually with assembler to work with contractors and customizations and so on. So there's the track with subversion. There's the more integrated, more modern integrated source SVN. There's the track with Git, the more integrated, more modern source Git. And we also support Mercurial with track. It's a simple implementation just like the others where you can get track and Mercurial. We hope to fully support Mercurial also. And we just haven't finished that implementation, but we'll have a source HG tool. And so we don't actually have any religion about what repository you should use. There's a lot of people who say, wow, Git, it's a lot better. It makes it much easier to manage branches, and that's actually true. On the other hand, 90% of commercial users use Subversion, and they use it because they can do partial checkouts if they have big code base. There's very real reasons why they might want to use Subversion. They can it's simple. It's a very simple model. Check it out, you commit it. You don't have to screw with merging. If you're using Git or Mercurial, you're constantly merging. That's the idea, right? You're controlling your code by deciding what you merge. With Subversion, you just get the latest. And it's great for people who are mainly Joomla programmers or mainly graphic designers, right? So we don't take a position on that. We think that each of these tools has a good use for the right kind of person.
Mm-hmm. So that actually covers a pretty broad range of you know, things that people might need. You know, I know the one of the guys that I had worked with before, he preferred Mercurial over any others. And then, of course, there's a lot of, you know, the more people who are who like to sort of stay with the latest, greatest sort of thing. They seem to be on Git a lot. And then, of course, you have a lot of people who are more familiar with Subversion. It's got a lot more a lot easier learning curve than Git does. And so I find a lot of people on that. And so having the ability to do any of those version control systems on the assembly system is really beneficial. So you can use the in-house Git system and Git with track or Git with the source control. Or you can use Subversion, the in-house system, or Subversion with track, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can also use GitHub or Mercurial. And now Mercurial's in-house also, is it?
We host Mercurial with track, but it's not a full integration. It's track.
Oh, okay.
The way to think about a version control system is as implemented by a company like Assembla. We host a version control server where your version control client, Subversion or Git or Mercurial HD, can connect and exchange code. Mm-hmm. We also put on top of that a code browser where you can look at the code and, you know, download the latest version just through your web browser, see the change sets, see diffs, what did I just change in that particular commit? And that code browser is implemented as a web app that's either, you can be track comes with a code browser, or our own embedded. That was a little complicated, but it's actually pretty simple. You can either get it through your repository host, or you can see it on the web.
Mm-hmm. So now, and the admin panel actually makes it possible to install multiple, and this is sort of a new thing I just read in your April release. You can install multiple repositories in your space now?
That's right. And that wasn't something that we originally intended to do. You know, our idea was, well, if you need another repository, just make a new space. The space is like a project. It's a container for a team. So you have a certain number of people working on, say, a repository or a ticket list. And it's very easy in Assembla just to bang on the button and make a new space and get a new repository that way. But actually, we have a feedback forum, and we got more votes for multiple repositories in one space than for anything else. So we implemented that. You can just
democracy.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's plans.
You can just have an extra tab. You know, let's say you have client, server, and mobile, you know, or something, you know, as your implementations. You can have all three of them up there sharing the same ticket list and team list. So that's I think what people want to do. It's really a way of using the issue management system.
Mm-hmm. Now, so talk about a little bit about the issue management system. It's a homebuilt system, but it's not like any other that I've seen. So talk a little bit about that. What people look for and what it does.
Okay. Well, issue management or ticketing is a core requirement for working effectively with a distributed team. You're not sitting there in a room with a whiteboard where you've written your tasks. So you have to post your tasks on the internet, and then you can go to the place where the list of tasks is, and you can work on the most important ones and mark them off as being closed and so on. So it's a very important tool. There are hundreds, probably thousands of ticketing and issue management systems out there. So we did not take the decision to make our own lightly. You know, at the time that we started, a lot of people were familiar with track and using it on Assembla. There are really good commercial systems like Jira that serve more complicated, you know, in-house projects. But we really try to fit in the middle with something like Track or GitHub or Google Code Ticketing. It has to be very, very simple because people are coming to it. You know, this is a part-time thing. They're coming to it. They're looking at a task. They're saying, hey, I want to report a bug, or hey, I want to keep track of this particular fix, and they need to be able to use it within two minutes of arriving on the site. With something like Jira, you're usually working with a team that's maybe worked together for years on the same project. It may be a complicated project with multiple sub projects, and you configure that system to fit. And everybody, you know, all programmers sort of configure and change any system or process that they touch. So Assembla fits in the middle. We're supporting pretty complicated projects that we do for clients. We do, you know, million-dollar jobs for clients with our rapid development service, where we pull together these distributed teams. Most of our customers are designers, consultants, and outsourcers who are supporting customers with pretty serious projects over time. And so we need to support those. But on the other hand, we're an online system where people expect to be able to push the button, get a workspace, and start working effectively in 3 minutes, right? That's the expectation on the internet. So we're sort of halfway between those two extremes. And what we have to do, we have to try to get the best of Track and, you know, GitHub, Google Code style, very simple systems, and also provide the ability to manage more complicated projects with much longer lists of tickets in the backlog and more intensive workflow. So we decided to build our own ticketing system. The other advantage of having your own ticketing system is you can link it very closely with the activity stream, the version control. You can make sure that if I'm committing code to fix a ticket, I can see that on both sides and so on. Mm-hmm. So we're really attempting to, we've invested a lot of thought in the what we call Assembla tickets in this system. And it's a work in progress. It doesn't meet both requirements perfectly. It's being sort of easy to use the first time you look at it, and then finally configurable into something that a team that's going to work on something for a year can really work with and keep as their core workflow engine. It may not meet both those requirements right now, but we're working at it to try to achieve the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. And it does have pretty nice customization features. I mean, if somebody wanted to customize their ticket system setup, you know, they want to put whatever fields in there. For example, PHBBB has a quality assurance team, which goes through after the development team, and they go through all the tickets and they test them in the system to make sure that they are fixed and they didn't break anything else. And then they verify that particular fix. Mm. So if PHBBB were to be on a Assembla type system, they would just add some additional custom fields, right, with values, and then allow the quality assurance team to go in and change the value to, like, verified?
Yes. So the system comes up with a default set of fields. For instance, who is it assigned to and what status is it in, description, the date that it was posted, and even a default set of milestones or iterations. It's got a backlog milestone. And you can go to the settings tab and progressively add more fields. Which team is this assigned to? What status do they think it's in? Has it gone to the build server and so on? You can progressively add more fields that match your particular workflow. You can add what we call filters, views of those tickets. You can change the default view so it comes up and you can see what's ready for test, for instance, instead of the default sort of what's the current iteration view. That's the idea. And over time, we'll be adding, we will not make that initial view more complicated, but we'll be adding options for custom fields, custom filters, custom statuses in the setting so that as you go along, you can add these things.
Mm-hmm. And custom reports?
Yeah, we need to do more work on reports. We have the filters, the list, but we don't have a report generator. And that's one of the things we're actually working on now.
Right, okay. Yeah, I have
the statistics.
Yeah. I'm a statistics sort of guy, so I love those those sorts of features. The burndown chart is really nice to use. That's one of my favorite features on Assembla. And the metrics is really nice to look at, but it doesn't really give you a whole lot of customization ability right now. So I'm hoping that will be in a soon-to-be-released. Of course,
I'm going to push back a little bit on that. The scarcest resource we have at Assembla, because we're building just so much software, not only for ourselves, but for clients.
Yeah.
Is management attention to the details of the implementation. If you can post a really specific idea about what you want, we have the capacity to develop that, you know, mm-hmm. quickly. But to really understand the feature and make it a good feature, we need help with that. So if anybody out there or if you has an idea about, for instance, how you want to change the burn down report or how you want to see a custom
go work for Assembla
engine. Well, write it down as specifically as you can. Mm-hmm. Send it to me or post it on feedback.assembly.com. That's really the scarce resource for us. And we also have a bounty program where if you want to build an add-on to Assembly or improve a feature, you can even add your own tab, your own tool. We'll fund it. We have a very limited amount of attention. We have to focus on being best of breed for repositories and ticketing and being up to speed with the basic collaboration. If somebody comes to us with a motivation, the ability to make an improvement, we'll fund that.
That's nice. So they can actually download the code, make the changes, and like submit a patch for it. And
yeah, it's actually better than that. You can go look at our code on assembly.com/space/assembly-dev, download and run it. It's a little bit complicated to set up because it is a high volume portal. It's got lots of different pieces to it. Mm-hmm. But and then send me a note saying, "Hey, I know how to improve this. I have an idea for it, how to make this better, how to add something nice. I'll do it for $5,000. And if I like it, I'll say yes. And you can hit the fork button and go to work."
Mm-hmm. Google Summer of Code, eat your heart out.
Well, we actually don't have a lot of people that take this. I'm trying to get people just to the first step of expressing clearly, almost at the functional spec level what they want, and proceeding from there. Mm-hmm. We will have our first bounty feature that's coming out of that program next week. It'll be the rebuilt chat.
Ah, that's nice. So that was actually something that I noticed out of a recent blog post. I hadn't seen it before, and in just going through and investigating the various features within Assembly, I came across the blog post, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that they did this. So it may be that a lot of people would add it, but they may not know about it unless they read the blog and read that particular blog post.
About the bounty program?
Right, yeah.
See that we're sort of trying to blur the boundary between commercial and open source style development.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm actually, while Dave has been talking with him and surfing through your site, and you have a recent blog post here on your site about publishing finished websites from your Git or Subversion repository in seconds using a sites feature. And I mostly do website development. I'm kind of curious about what this is about here.
A lot of people use Assembly for website development. They make a website, they put it in a repository, they share it with their customers that way, and they maintain it over time. It's an excellent way to use a system like Assembly. What we found is that it's way more complicated than it needs to be to show these sites. Before we put in the sites feature, you had to get, you have a web server somewhere where you can make a virtual website. Most of you guys probably have that. And then you can add a tool that we have called the FTP Publisher that when you commit code, it'll push via FTP to that web server. But it's a lot of stuff to set up. We were doing it for our own. We have microsites that we maintain. I got frustrated one day. I said, why can't we just right-click on the file, on the directory in the source code browser and say, hey, publish this to a website at name X. Uh-huh. And so that's what we built. So if you take your website code with relative URLs and push it into an Assembly repository, you can click on it and say, hey, publish this directory as a website, myproject.assembly.me. Or if you have your own DNS, you can put in your own name. It takes like 2 seconds. It's just like you almost feel disappointed at how easy it is.
No, I like this idea because I'm looking at getting a website sort of more as a team development rather than just personal developments, and so I've been looking. I might just give this a try with a system like this, as a repository type of environment for developing. All right, back to you, David.
So, in that build and deploy, there is a build tool, and I've never tried it. What does that do?
When you commit to a repository and you're building a web system or any kind of a system, what you really want is to pull that code out of the repository. You're a developer, right? Here's how it works. You develop it on your own computer and you look at it, you test it, then you commit it to the repository. And then what should happen is there should be a script somewhere that pulls it out of that repository and puts it on a staging server where everybody else you work with can see it. And then if you like that, you should be able to push a button and there's this another script that's somewhere that pulls it into a production server and you're ready to go. That's called builds, right? When you pull it out and you pull the code out of the repository and you make a running system that you can use. What we've done with the build tool is we've added a little tab on your system where you can say, hey, let's trigger a build. So I'm going to back up here. There are two ways to do a build. One is the very simple way where you just use FTP to push the files onto the server. And if you're using HTML, if you're just building an HTML website, or even if you use a lot of PHP systems, you can actually do a build that way. You can just push the new files out there and you'll have your new version. And we have an FTP tool in Assemble that will do that either when you commit or hourly or daily or when you push the button. It'll move the code through to your server where people can see it. If you have a more complicated system like Assembla, where you might have to make updates to the configuration, you might have to make changes to the database, you might have to compile some code. That's the typical thing that happens with a build. Even with Java, you have to compile it into jars, right? If you have a more complicated system, then you can't just push the files. You have to send a signal to the server, you know, hit a URL somewhere that says, hey, run a build. And then you have scripts on that server that pull the code and run the build. That's what the build tool does, is trigger that whole process. And what we would like to do is, and we're in the process of doing, is hook that up with pre-configured servers so that you can go to your local virtual server host, Amazon, or just what we use or wherever else, and get an assembled pre-configured server and say, hey, I want this to be a PHPBB server. And it'll run a chef script to assemble that, and then you can put the IP address of that server into the build tool, and all of the build scripts will already be there. So it'll take, instead of you having to figure out this whole process of scripted builds, you'll just start the matching server and go hit the button. And now I know that a lot of PHP systems, and I'm not that familiar with PHPBB, are not designed to work that way. You know, you sort of, like Joomla, right, or Drupal, you sort of edit it on the server and that's one style of doing it, but it doesn't really hold up if you have multiple developers who want to commit code and then have that be tested on a staging server and then have a completely reliable process for getting the exact same thing you tested on the production server.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I hadn't used that tool before, but that sounds like something I'll definitely want to use. I was just looking through some of the features that it has. It has so you can build manually, so you can go in and click the deploy button and it will, you know, do that once you click it, or you can do it on commit, so like a post-commit hook, essentially.
Right, which is called continuous integration.
Mm-hmm. And then it'll have hourly, daily, and weekly.
Exactly.
Periodic.
So timed integration. And you have to have the build script. So all our tool does is trigger the build scripts, which is why I'm hoping that I can work with various platform communities to get these pre-configured servers set up with the build scripts in them.
Mm-hmm.
And our motto is accelerate software development. That'll take a lot of the work out of setting up a new project and really running it with continuous integration.
Mm-hmm. So now the webhook, what does that do?
Webhook is basically the same thing. So webhook is an idea that's been floating around the internet for a couple of years, and a lot of systems implement it. The idea is that when you have an activity or an event, like a commit or I edited a ticket or I edited a wiki page, the code commit is the one we were just talking about, that not only does that show up on your activity stream or your Twitter or your Facebook newsfeed or whatever, but it triggers my server to reach out with, it triggers a webhook. A webhook is like a post-commit hook. You can set it up and tell my server to go out and make some sort of a web request. So you could, for instance, every time you commit code, you could use the webhooks as your build trigger. You could say, hey, go post this information about that commit to a particular URL. Or you could send it to Twitter. We have a Twitter tool, but you could do the same thing with, it's just a simplified version of webhooks. You could post to the Twitter API, or you could post to a chat server, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that's how systems on the web talk to each other in real time.
Yeah. So now the current simple persistent chat, that's being replaced by the new chat that's coming in, right?
Yeah, the simple persistent chat doesn't work. It was a bad implementation, and nobody really used it anyway, so we let it go out of date. It was a bad implementation because it uses what we call push. The server will actually send data to the client, to a flash control waiting on the client, and that doesn't go through firewalls. So we've been for a long time recommending that people use Skype, which is what most people use anyway. I was in a room full of developers and outsourcers, and I said, how many people here use Skype? And it was like 98%. A lot of people use Skype chat for conferencing, but there are some people who want the simplicity and the reliability of just being able to click on the chat tab and making sure that everyone in their team can get the chat without any additional, whether they're behind a firewall or not, without any additional configuration, et cetera, et cetera. So right now we're doing work on making sure that that feature works, and we'll be releasing that in the next week or two.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. So we've kind of gone through a lot of the features there, and actually there's far more than what we've touched on. I see there's Scrum, which are like for the stand-up meetings. I used to do that at a couple of companies that we did. The time reporting tool, which is great for keeping track of, how long each particular task takes. Because as you know, a lot of companies are using issue tracking tools as not just a bug tracker or not just a bug tracker anymore, but a task tracker. Everything that has to be done is sort of tracked through a ticket so that it can be reviewed later on. And actually, a couple of the Google Code guys give a talk on that, and that actually was highlighted in the recent PHPBB blog. But
I would love to read that because it always fascinates me. We designed this system as a pretty specialized system for making code.
Mm-hmm.
You write tickets about what code you're going to make, and then you commit code, and that relates to the ticket. And about 30% of our users use it just as a straight up task management system without the code. So we're definitely seeing a lot of that. And in fact, we manage our marketing and sales teams that way. We make milestones for them and tasks. And it may be worth backing up and talking about the Scrum tool and the chat tool, how that all links together into distributed agile process. So we put these tools in the system because we use them to manage our distributed agile teams and to work together. When we start work in the morning, everybody, wherever they are, and we're 30 people in, 11 time zones or something. Everybody's asked to fill up that standout report. What did I do yesterday? What am I going to do today? And do I need anything? Which is really important. So I can scan through that and I can see who needs stuff. That's a classic, technique that's pulled out of the idea of the Scrum methodology. And in fact, the Scrum methodology says it's really important to get everybody in a room to do the stand-up meeting. In fact, that's not true. It's very effective if everybody just does it when they get to it, when they start work in the morning. It is important to do a real-time meeting, and that's why we recommend either the Assembly chat or the Skype chat, that you have a scheduled meeting every day at the same time and that everybody shows up for a few minutes to handle those what I need issues. All that time you're posting your tasks in the ticketing system, and we actually use a pull system I don't assign tasks to anybody. Think about an open source team. You don't assign tasks to people. They don't actually work for you. People pull the tasks that are at the top of the list, and actually they're better at it than me. They know what they can do well. So that's how sort of three of the tools link together into a distributed agile process that you can use not only for code development, but also for, many hundreds of other types of teams that are working together out there. And in fact, we're gonna do more with that. We've just released free repo. The idea behind our free offerings is that we're gonna give you something that's really, really useful, but that you probably wouldn't pay us our full price for. And that's a way for us to get leads for our full price product. We're gonna release some free stand-up, rename the Scrum tool as stand-up. And you know, it's something that basically anybody can use if they're working with a distributed team. Mm-hmm.
So now I saw that you actually give talks on working with agile development and different teams around the world.
Yes, I do. I have a particular approach to distributed agile. And when I get a chance, I do my little slideshow. I call it the tips and tricks. So I can spend half an hour and go through 6 things you should do if you're working with a distributed agile team that are things like, you know, always post the stand up and have the daily chat, always commit your code every day, always run at least a daily build. Mm-hmm. And they're all pretty standard stuff. And then there are 6 things not to do, which are much more interesting. Things like don't travel, you know. Like people who run commercial software teams, they try to bring people together. Turns out you can really never make back the time if you're efficient at all in managing a distributed team. Don't interview. We don't interview people. We try to find the best talent by actually just plugging, you know, if we like their resume and their availability, we plug them into a project, we pay them by the hour for a week, and we do trials.
That's a really good idea, because I've found that a lot of developers don't do so well in interviews. But when you put them in front of code, they're masters. And, you know, so sometimes...
Yeah, interviews are a terrible way to find people who are good at coding. You know, you basically pick people who are good at interviewing.
Yeah,
it's kind of my... I mean, I'm in music, and we've always kind of found, you know, auditioning someone is the worst way to find out if they're going to be great in an orchestra, which is a group music, and auditioning is a solo piece. Doesn't really work the same way, huh?
So trials, yeah, the trial idea is applicable wherever you can get away with it. Some other hints that I have are don't do conference calls. People hate them. Sometimes I have to take over. Venture capitalists will call me and say, hey, you need to help me fix this project where they were supposed to release it, you know, 6 months ago and nothing's come out. You know, can you do some magic to kick this out the door? And the worse the project is, the more time they spend on conference calls.
Oh, man.
This huge negative correlation. You know, the less time you spend on conference calls, the better you do. I don't know whether it's cause effect, but it's definitely something to avoid. So I have these,
don't,
you know.
From our mouths to yours, don't use conference calls, we say as we are on a conference call right now.
This is a podcast. That's different.
Yeah. It's different because, you know what, with a podcast, somebody can come back to this and listen to it later. And that's how most people are going to hear this podcast. And with a conference call, you're forcing everybody to show up and drop what they're doing and listen to your problem.
Although we like it when you guys drop what you're doing and come and listen to us live. We like that. And you know, you're putting us out of business here. Okay.
Yeah, but you don't have to. And you know, you're not. It's an opportunity, right? Most conference calls are really about the manager's problem. Mm-hmm. You know, stations don't resolve themselves. You know, as a manager, I can say that.
Right. Well, I worked with a company that that did 1 to 2 hour conference calls every single day at the same time. And, yeah, it takes a huge chunk out of your workday when you're spending, you know, about a fourth of your time is being spent on a conference call instead of working on the code. When you add it up over a week, you know, it's more than a day and a half worth of work that you lost because you were conference calling.
It's ridiculous. It's expensive and it's irritating. Mm-hmm. And I would ask you two guys, have you ever worked on a project where you did a lot of conference calls and it just was a great project?
No.
I've never heard anyone say yes.
What
ever.
I'm wondering is why, what kind of project would have so many issues that you would need to have daily conference calls? I could see weekly conference calls, maybe.
Well, that's not really the reason that they did the daily conference calls. The reason that they did the daily conference calls was just, you know, it was stand-up, you know, it was the stand-up meetings, you know, they're kind of asking, you know, how's everybody doing? Okay, I'm working on this. And they go through everything that they're working on. And then, you know, the manager's like, well, why don't you, you know, and he's like, okay, the sort of one-on-one conversations that a manager would have with an employee to sort of discuss a particular feature, that all happens during the stand-up meeting. And so you have, you know, 10 people listening to somebody else's conversation with the manager one at a time.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, so that's the point, is that you can be an ineffective manager with these distributed audiences, and you can try to fall back on the crutch, like a conference call where everybody has to drop what they're doing and help you. Or you can be a good manager and just follow some of these basic practices.
Right. And you know, down in Texas, we had a manager who would come in and he would, you know, he might talk with you one-on-one, but you didn't actually go into these meetings. You know, there was the periodic weekly meetings and stuff like that, but it wasn't a daily occurrence. So mostly you would just go in and you'd work, and he might come in and talk about a particular feature with you. And that was efficient. That was, you know, the most efficient way to handle it. But in this other company that I worked for, everybody worked remotely. And so he figured the best way to handle having everybody sort of feel like they were in the same office and work together was to have a conference call with everybody every single day. But I think it just killed the efficiency of the team.
Well, yeah, and that was the crutch he used, and he just didn't understand, you know, some of these basic principles. And I think they're very easy to learn. So, you know, I'm trying to learn from the way open source projects work. I'm trying to adapt what I can into Assembler.com, where lots, you know, tens of thousands of teams can use it. And I also try to package what I learned from my own business as these tips and tricks when I can. But it does work.
We're all typing.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Right. Let's see. All right. So the...
Did you lose your notes, David?
I'm trying to figure out what to get to next, because I know we're on 51 minutes or so here now, so I just wanted to make sure I would cover all the important stuff. So in short, I want to get to now basically how Assembler can be useful to the PHPBB community, and more specifically, the mod author community and the style author community within PHPBB. And I know we've gone through a lot of the basic features, and by now, if you're a mod author and you haven't seen the usefulness of this type of system,
I'm not a mod author anymore, and I'm even starting to consider this for, you know, just like basic website, collaborative website development. Now, David, I know you do Star Trek Guide website, your site. You've managed that through a repository system as well.
Yeah, we actually do that through Assembler.
Yeah, how is that? So partly for my sake, how exactly do you use Assembler for your workflow? Just get some ideas here.
Right, well, we have our Star Trek Guide development team on the Assembler team, and anybody else who does the coding for the Star Trek Guide site is on the team on Assembler.com. And then we actually have two different version control systems. We have Git and Track, and we have Subversion and Track. And we have a private repository because obviously we don't want the code for our website to be, you know, it's not public code. So it's a private space. And then for the Git and Track repository, that's where we do all of our new development for the new site and the new systems that we've been developing.
This new site that we're supposed to be able to see by now, right? You don't have to answer that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the answer is, of course, yes.
waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, I know, me too. actually, I'm not waiting. I'm working on other stuff, and that's the reason why it hasn't shown up yet.
Of course.
So, yeah, all of our new development is on Git, and we actually use Git branches to, you know, we have a couple of different sites that we work on, but because it's all in one space, we have done different Git branches, but that's not really how you're supposed to use Git. You know, every branch isn't supposed to be completely different from the other. So the new features in the April 14th release of Assembler are really going to be useful for us, where we can open a different source, Git sources, that manage those individual sub-projects within our main Star Trek Guide project. So that will be really helpful. And then the current system is on Subversion, Subversion and Track. And that one, the developers will push, you know, they'll, when they do the commits, we actually have a tool within phpbb.com or within our PHPB installation on Star Trek Guide where they, the founders can go in and then they can run a an SVN update. And that was actually before the build tool was developed on Assembler, because we've been using Assembler now for, oh, at least 3 years. So it really helps as far as, you know, basically being able to see everything everybody commits and be able to run that on there. Having the private repository is really beneficial for our particular site. And then we have the ticket system we use to, you know, when there's a bug reported on the forum somewhere, we go in and put it in the ticket system. Or when we have a particular task that needs to be developed, then we'll ticket that, and then whoever wants to take it next, one of the developers will take that ticket, and then they'll develop for it and then commit to the repository. So, and everything we have divided into milestones, and we have specific release dates for each milestone. So, like, we might have the monthly milestone release that we have, and, you know, to make sure all the tickets are in there, and any ones that are not completed, we just push back to another milestone. That's one way to do it. Instead of delaying the milestone, we release it, everything that's been done, and the other tickets that aren't done yet, we push those on to the next
one. Well, that's actually what we recommend. That's the way an agile process should work, that you should try to release on time and just move the tasks that are not done. It reduces risk a lot, because then you're getting your releases out. You don't have the risk that you're never going to get the release out and you're not going to see what people think.
And for the for managing a lot of tickets at a time, I like to use the Agile Planner or Batch Update. It just depends on which particular thing I want to do. Because Batch Update, like, I can go in and actually check, like, I have a whole bunch of tickets in, like, a Milestone 5 that need to be moved to Milestone 6 because Milestone 5 needs to be released. And so I can just go through and select all the tickets in Milestone 5 and then change it to Milestone 6, and it just happens in an instant. So it makes managing all your tickets a whole lot easier with Batch Update. And then the Agile Planner I really like for organizing the tickets, because then you can drag and drop your tickets, or you can add a like sort of a parent ticket and create, you can create new tickets in rapid succession using the Agile Planner, which is one of my favorite things. And they're actually called stories on Assembler, but it never made much sense to me. I was calling.
That's another. If you're if you use one of these agile methodologies, they talk about stories, which are sort of higher level ticket,
right,
and then tasks that that go underneath them. That's another thing we'll be upgrading over the next few weeks, is hopefully make that faster, that process faster and more fun.
Right, and it, you can edit the tickets right in the Agile Planner, which is really nice, because you can just you can go through all of them right there. One of the things that I do like about the ticket view is that you can of course set up your own filters. So, like, one of the projects that I have, we've created a bunch of custom fields, and then we created a new filter that lists the specific fields that we want to list on most, you know, on the most popular view, and so that always lands on that view by default on the when you go to the ticket, when you go to the tickets tab, it lands on that filter. And then you can right click on a ticket and manage most of the options from there. Although, Andy, one of the things that I noticed is that some of the custom options cannot be edited through the ticket view. Like, it shows that you can edit it there, but then it always fails, so you have to actually go in and edit.
All right, well, we'll fix it.
Yep. I know. And one of the nice things that I did like about Assembler is when we did working with one of the companies that I was working with, and we were going through various systems that we could use for management, and we went we used Bugzilla. There was another one, I can't remember, Frog something, and then went back to Assembler because it had everything in much nicer package than anything else that we used. And so we went with that. And certainly, I can understand why PHPBB development team went with Jira, because it's a really powerful system. You know, you can really do a lot of stuff with it. But the biggest problem with it is it's not user-friendly at all. And when you have the entire community, they have to be able to report bugs and tickets to the bug tracker. You know, they're the ones that have to be able to use it just as much as the development team does, and you give them a system that they can't use so well. You have a lot of clueless users, which are like, they look at that system and they just, you know, fogs their mind and they leave. You know, they can't report a ticket or keep track of it. And it's like, well, it's not that hard, but it's not that hard for us developers. I can use Terminal too. Terminal is really easy for me. Command line, really easy for us. But your average user is not going to understand the ins and outs.
Terminal scares me. I did Subversion through Terminal for a while before there was, back when Subversion was fairly new, but it still kind of scares me.
And Jira almost feels like a command line type of system when you're working with it. It's just not that user friendly. Hmm. So that's been my biggest gripe with the PHPB teams choosing that for their system. And I have a feeling that a lot of people agree with me on that point and, you know, are kind of silent about it right now because it was so time consuming in setting it up. They're kind of like, well, we don't want to just switch that quickly. But at the same time, it's like, you know what, guys? Nobody is, you know, if nobody's using it, you got to switch.
David, so, Sneaky sent me in the chat, says that you're insulting Terminal by comparing it to Jira.
That's Techie Michael.
Not quite paraphrase him.
Sneaky Simeon, that's Techie Michael, and he is one of the best security experts I know. I mean,
everyone's taking their jeers at Jira.
Well, Jira is a very, you know, is a tough competitor. Atlassian is a very successful company, and it's a system that people use very effectively when they want to tune it, you know, for an in-place development team. But it is designed for a different environment. It's designed for that environment, not a, you know, surf in and start work environment.
Right. And, well, I mean, for the development team of phpbb.com, it's fine. You know, it probably suits their needs just fine. And if it was only for them, that would be sufficient. But that's the thing. It's not. It's for the rest of the community as well. The rest of the community and the quality assurance team and the junior developers, they all have to be able to use it and use it well and efficiently. And I just feel like it doesn't meet that need, that crucial need.
All right.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get back to the original question that Doug asked, which is, are you Doug or Douglas?
Doesn't really matter.
The original question is, you know, how would you use a system like Assembla if you're part of the PHPB community and you have both client and open source work that you do? And I think there's really two different use cases. One use case is where you're doing work with clients or with your own websites. It'd be great to have an Assembla project for each one of those sites or clients where you can keep track of your code over time, your tickets, and so on. It's just a really, really good way to manage it. It will always be there. If you're working with clients, they can always see what's going on. You know, you can add them to that project and give them watcher permission, for instance. And that's really the core use case. It's the one that David was just talking about. There's another use case, which is more like what people do with sites like GitHub, where you're going to be working on open source code and you're going to be using our free public installation and people are going to be coming and they're going to be contributing tickets. They're going to be downloading source code and they're going to be forking. We offer fork now for Subversion as well as Git, which is a new thing. They're going to be forking and hopefully contributing. And that's where if you're building a mod or, you know, some sort of library item, you would consider that use case.
So now if a mod author were to use Assembla, they would likely use the public free space because, you know, their code is going to be open source anyways. And if they're already using GitHub, then they could just link their GitHub account straight into the Assembla account. And they begin using it through Assembla.
Mm-hmm. True, yeah. And they would do that mostly because they were interested in Assembla tickets, which you just talked about. That would be the most common reason.
Right. And Or you can, you know, or if you are not using, you know, as a mod author, if you're not using a current system, then you would just, you might just run the public free space, which of course has the ticketing system and the milestones, and you can choose either Subversion or Track, and which
Subversion or Git or Track, yeah.
Right, that's what I meant. Subversion or Git. I meant Subversion or Git. Yeah. But there, you know, there's Mercurial too, so it just depends on what you're most familiar with. But those are my two favorites.
Yeah, and we're going to be offering a new feature. We have a branded portal feature where you can get your own URL, and it'll show just the projects that you own at that URL. You can sort of customize the style of that. We'll be upgrading that so that if you have a community that's working on, you know, some particular type of library or mod, you'll be able to get your own URL and create a little portal that shows all the code.
Mm-hmm. And so the primary reason that a mod author would want to use Assembla is this. It will speed up your development and make it more efficient. That's the idea behind the Assembla system.
Yes, and there's some sharing benefits also, but we really focus more on accelerating software development, making the actual work more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Great system. So let's. So we've talked all this time about everything that Assembla can do. So someone who's a prospective, like mod author, wants to give this a try as their system, what's the best way they can go sign up? And I guess also maybe you can clarify a little bit about the differences between your different plans, because there's, I see, about six different plans.
Okay. Yeah, there's two things to think about, and both of them are complicated because this, we use Assembla for our own use, right? And we have lots of different tools. So the first thing to remember is that when you go to Assembla, you'll be asked to pick a project template. Do you want Subversion? Do you want Git? Do you want it with tickets? We've actually pre-configured the different options in what we call the catalog. You go to a tab called Get a Space and pick the option that most closely matches your needs. The vast majority of people pick Git with Assembla tickets, which basically comes with everything, or Subversion with Assembla tickets, which basically comes with everything. The second thing that you need to do is pick a plan. If you're going to be sharing this code and it doesn't need to be private, just pick the free public. Mm-hmm. You get everything. You support open source and community projects that way. If you want to get started for free and you just need the repository, there's a free repository plan. It just comes with the repository. You can check in, check out, use the code browser, get views of change sets, but you don't get the tickets and collaboration tools. Obviously, we hope most people take one of the full featured plans, which come with a 30-day no obligation free trial, and mm-hmm. give you a private workspace with everything.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have dropped the metered pricing plan now, right?
We did. When we looked at how people were using the metered pricing plan, and most of them were using very few users, so it was really cheap. It was like, you know, $6, $9 we were getting. You know, we spend like $1 million a year on this thing, so it didn't really add up to that much revenue. I know it was a lot, it was some value for people, but about half those people also just use the repository. So they're going to get, when we came out with a free repository offer, we took care of half those people anyway. We're actually going to bring metered back. We're going to bump the pricing up a little bit, and obviously everybody who has metered gets to keep it. And we're going to try that. You know, we're trying to respond to customer demand.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring metered back actually on Tuesday.
Okay.
So it gives you a way to get started with two or three people. There's a surprising number of people actually that just have one person. Mm-hmm. in a project, which wasn't the way we designed it, but it fits with what David was saying, that this is a good way to keep track of your code and files.
And that's really useful if you wanted a private system, or, you know, you're developing for a private website, or your company website, or your company development is done that way.
And when we bring Meter back, it'll be $4 instead of $3, but you'll be able to get, you know, the full boat for just yourself if you want it that way. Keep track of all your intellectual property in one place. Mm. And Assembla is unique. It's very unique compared with something like Jira. Mm. And basically unique compared to anything else on the market, in that if you've built up code and documentation and, you know, a list of all the tasks that you're working on in one place. It's basically intellectual property in an assembled space or project. You can reassign that to a new owner. So if somebody takes over your project or it goes to a different department or your client, you know, you're a designer and now your client's ready to move on to programming, you can reassign it to them because it's a portal, you know, more like Facebook than, you know, Jira where you serve Basecamp where you get your own account. We just transfer the ownership and the, all the IP goes with it. It's a good practice to think about, even though most people don't do it.
There you go.
Did I explain about how to get Assembler? Pick a configuration.
Yeah, and I did want to clarify one thing.
In case you missed it.
When you create a space, you know, you have all these pre-configured spaces. You can still, it's sometimes like, ooh, what if I, you know, choose this one and I actually want a tool from one of the other ones? Well, once you get a space, you can go to the admin tab and configure the tools that you want. So you can configure it however you want. You can drop some tools or you can add some different ones and, you know, you make it how you want to use it. And you
yeah,
can
it's
use
very
it.
Low risk. You can, the configurations are just to help you get started. You can always go to the admin tab and build it up with the tools you want. That was, we just didn't want to force people to go through that, you know. So there's so that's important to remember. You can always take any space that you have and reconfigure it by adding and removing tools. I want to mention one other thing that we've tried that hasn't been a huge success, but I hope people will pick up on. And that is in these pre-configured spaces, you can put code so they can come with, you know, essentially a fork of the code. It's a copy. You can put documentation. They can come with instructions on how to set this up. You can include a build tool, right? You can design your own space. And you can use it as a template. There's a copy link at the bottom of each of these spaces. You can use it as a template as if it came out of the catalog. And you can even contribute it back to the catalog. You can say, hey, I have this workspace. It's great for PHPB mod development. It's got the code and a skeleton that comes with it. And if you, you know, you can, there's a link where you can go and you can submit that to our catalog.
Wow. I think that's about all the time we have, but we need to start wrapping up the show. But Andy Singleton, he's the president and founder of Assembler, and it's been a great conversation. And, you know, it's always one thing I've learned from this is there's always another way of doing stuff. Developing your site, there's always numerous ways of doing it. So give them a check them out for free, or if you have the money, pay for it. And, You maybe can find out new ways of doing your development. I'm definitely going to take a closer look at it. So, you can stick around a little bit. We're just going to quickly run through the last little bits of our show with, of course, our mod and style of the week. Our mod of the week. Where is the paste bin? There it is. It is called Lock Post on Report by KP3011. It's kind of an older mod, but I thought it was kind of a nice idea. What it does is if someone makes a report on a post on your PHPBB board, the mod will automatically lock the reported post, which will be able to prevent the members from editing the content once the post has been reported. It's kind of a nice idea. Say, you know, a user posts some, I don't know, profanity or something, and someone else reports them, and that user decides he wants to go ahead and quickly change the content of that post, just so that he doesn't get in trouble before the moderator comes around and, you know, investigates. This can prevent them from doing that, so they can actually, you know, maybe be, you know, actually be busted
Be busted for the crimes.
Yeah. And of course, if the report is, you know, baloney and the report, you know, is dismissed, then of course that can be reset. So if, you know, in which case probably not a big deal. So this is a nice little idea, nice little mod. You know, I think you know, go ahead and check it out. And this, you don't get from the style of the week. Don't get the idea that this. Oh, I just pasted the mod.
Yeah, you did, and I put it in the the chat room too.
Except that I forgot to. Oh.
It said URL removed. What?
I don't know how. I guess I don't know how to set up this anymore. It's been forever. All right, mode. PHP Weekly minus U. There. Now you can paste it. Okay.
There's the style.
There's the style and the mod.
The mod is here.
Whew. It has been way too long. I'm sorry. Oh, man. Okay. Where were we?
So this is the poker style.
The poker Olympus style. Now, this is not what we've been doing for the past 4 weeks, I promise you. But by Apple Cosa Nostra, he's Apple's done great styles. I think, you know, that year, I think it was 2 years ago, that phpbbhacks.com did that sort of a phpbbhacks idol. He was the winner of that style for that, so that was great. He does some good styles. This is obviously based off of ProSilver, a fairly black and white style, aside from the header image, which is actually quite clever, right? Quite a nice header image design. So, I mean, I'm sure there's probably a little more that could be done for a cards casino type style, but you know, it's a clever little use of a style, and it's and also did make some changes to the icons and stuff in the style, so pretty nice, I think. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different.
I also, I'm trying to figure out what this little upper right, or right below the toolbar, there's little icons, you hover over them and they like expand, but it's the different view options, your posts, unanswered posts, active topics.
Those.
Growy icons for those. You see that?
Growy icons. Right, okay.
Growy icons. We are the amazing technical language used on PHP BB Weekly. So, that's all we got for the show. Check out our website, phpbbweekly.net, for the show notes, links we talked about and stuff on this show, plus all of our past episodes. We have our forum at StarTrekGuide.com. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/phpbbweekly, and we also have a Facebook page. I don't remember the link to it, but you can find all those links from our website. So here's the deal. Since we are catching up, actually this is called Operation Catch-Up, in terms of I'm going to be releasing...
As in tomato ketchup?
Yeah, as in if I don't get these episodes released, they will be throwing tomatoes at me. So... we are going to get 6 episodes released this week on this schedule. All the episodes that have, you know, outstanding, where we're waiting on. Episodes number 143, which is from the Monumental Meetup 2 months ago, and number and 140. Actually, I got that wrong. Oh my gosh! Because we already did 145. I can't believe I can't remember what my numbers are. Okay, what episodes are missing? 144 is not out yet.
Yeah, that's the one that we did 3 weeks ago when you weren't there.
Okay, and number 146, I believe, was our April Fool's episode, right?
That I don't know. Yeah, we did. Well, we did an April Fool's episode, but I thought you released that already. That was a little birdie, or was that one a different one?
No, that's a different one.
Well, we'll figure all this out.
Okay, point is, there'll be 2 episodes coming out on Sunday. Then there'll be number 147, the last episode that David did without me, comes out on Monday. This episode comes out Wednesday. Then we're recording another episode. This week we're going to talk about all of the PHPBB news and stuff that we've missed. That will be released, hopefully, on either Thursday or Friday. All of this is subject to change, however, because I have jury duty on Tuesday.
Oh, my. That's new.
Yes, this is new. Welcome back home. I have jury duty.
Jury duty. Are you even old enough to have jury duty?
I'm registered to vote, so yeah. I'm 18 now. I can do that.
Wow.
I suppose.
Oh, amazing.
Then join us next Saturday. Will be our 150th episode, our sesquicentennial. We'll do. Can you believe that's actually a word? But you can. We'll do something special for that. I'm sure. We'll figure something out. So certainly keep. We'll figure all this out, and we'll get a post on our website about it, so you'll know what's coming up. And so.
But and I'll twist Douglas's arm to put it on Star Trek Guide also.
Mm-hmm. Or you could do it just as easily.
Yeah.
So. But be sure to join us next Saturday, May 15th. We'll have something special coming up. We're catching up. 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 1700 UTC time, same time, same place, same station. We are back. It is summer, so we will be having a very big summer planned for you once we get a chance to plan it. So,
oh yeah, so I just put a link to the blog post, "The Myth of the Genius Programmers." If you haven't had a chance to see it, go see it, and we'll talk about it at a later episode. But go see it first so that you can get a little background. That is a very, very good video from the Google Code developers.
Awesome. Yeah, I have to watch it. I saw that it was like an hour long. I don't have time.
Well, you don't have to watch it. You just listen to it. It's like
isn't that how most of Google
could be,
stuff
it could
goes?
Be an MP3. I mean, you know, really.
Oh, well, Google owns YouTube. What can you do? So that's it. Andy, thanks again for joining us. Great show. Great interview. And you have a great product. And I really appreciate all your work. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And wrapping up, I'm Douglas Bell.
And I'm David Lewis.
Remember, a successful community begins with you.
Tag.
You're it.
Goodbye, everyone.
Said that, huh? Goodbye, everybody.